Micah, have you ever thought about leaving behind a video for your future children?
They need to know. Yeah, when I die, I want them to be able to know how to put on socks, how to make a good cup of coffee, and I don't have a third thing.
A good cup of coffee, though. I'm on board with you there. I think that that is a useful skill.
A good cup of coffee and how to back up their computer. Those would be the things that would go into my video. What's in your posterity video?
Oh, man. For my son? Definitely. He already knows how to make coffee.
Okay.
So we're good with that.
Good to go.
Oh, man. I was prepared to ask you. I was not prepared for it to be turned around on me. This always happens. Okay. How to remove stains from almost anything.
Ooh,
pretty good at that.
Can you send that one to me when you're done with it?
There's a video, actually, a Jonathan Mann video featuring hops. It's called Stain Remover Hero.
Oh my God. Check it out.
So yeah, how to remove stains. I would want to demonstrate that. And how to fix a broken zipper.
Oh,
I know a lot of like costume related tasks and abilities.
That's a good one.
And let's see. Oh, how to fill a fountain pen. There we go.
Ah, that's good. I like that. I like that. And I mean, it seems like you have the benefit of being able to, given this is how it should work, is that you have a child, Michael, already, and you're teaching that child many things. And it's just like things that they, that you might not get the chance to teach them before you stick your, what was it, a fork in a, in a light bulb.
Well, he had an epiphany. He had some realizations that he had to get some things out. I enjoy this cold open mainly because it's Michael being ridiculous and highlighting certain aspects about himself and what he doesn't know in relation with. I like how it gets framed in that he wants to tell this to his son because it's something his mother wouldn't be able to teach him.
Yeah.
And yet it's all stuff that Michael doesn't know how to do. So it emphasizes the ridiculousness of the idea that only a son should know these things and a mother couldn't teach them and only he could.
And honestly, my favorite part of this, it's not even, you know, Dwight pretending to be Pam. My favorite part of this is Michael saying randomly put the jumper cables all over the battery in different places. And then Dwight just turning the camera toward himself and going, or shaking his head no, like, please don't do this.
I also wrote that down as a favorite moment. It's just he had to inject into the video, like, please don't do this. But without saying anything or having Michael notice, he turns the camera on himself and just shakes his head.
Like, no,
it's so good. Because really, Dwight could, you know, probably teach this kid a lot more stuff more easily, but he lets Michael do it. He runs the camera, and it's actually a sweet relationship between the two of them. And it's a little bit of Dwight is pandering with Michael.
My other favorite part of this is at the very end of the cold open, where Dwight is sort of like, he wants a certain level of control of the situation too. Like, he's trying to help out, but he wants to be able to do like his job, and Michael doesn't like it. And so they at the same time, like, say roll or action, and they're both just kind of, Michael's kind of annoyed with Dwight that he's doing more than he was given permission to do. And it's just so, it's just Michael. It's quintessential Michael Scott, and I appreciate that.
So we find out that in the meat of the episode, it is 6 days away from Phyllis's wedding, and that's pretty soon. So in a week, Phyllis will be married to Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration.
I'm getting married to Bob Vance.
And we have this whole episode is basically the two sides of this kind of office bachelor party, bridal shower, bachelorette party.
Yes.
Is what's going on, the two sides in the office today.
Todd Packer is there.
What up, my nerds?
Oh my God.
So there's a moment in Michael's office where he has Packer and he's sitting him down and they're talking about this bachelor party that Michael is throwing for Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration. And it is going to be just Michael planned kind of a really nice lunchtime get together where he was going to grill some meat and they were going to hang out, and it seemed like there was going to be cards and just kind of a nice 45 minute little lunchtime party. And Packer comes in and he kind of throws in this wrench of saying, like, you got to have a stripper. And at first, Michael does the right thing. He's like, no, 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 we can't have a stripper here. It would be sexual harassment. It's the wrong thing to do in the office. And no. But Packer gives him all of this grief for Guff, it. And it's just like, you have to have a stripper.
A stripper is bachelor party 101. If you don't get a stripper, your party is going to suck.
I can't get a stripper here. Sexual harassment.
Get one for the girls, too. That evens it out. You know, separate but equal.
So that's what that means.
And then he insults Michael and makes him feel bad. Like, have you ever really been to a bachelor party? And that's so rude, right? Of course. And that's what the whole point of the scene is. And we feel a little bit bad that Michael hasn't been to any bachelor parties because I guess he hasn't had any friends that have invited him. And that kind of hurts Michael, I'm sure, because he's feeling inadequate that he doesn't actually know what a bachelor party is. But in all honesty, his idea of a bachelor party at work seemed really good.
Yes, it was appropriate. It was, It seemed like it would be fun, and it was inclusive in the sense that, like, nobody would have a reason to feel uncomfortable for being there.
And yet we have Packer just
ruining
everything and baiting Michael. And Michael would have, if he were stronger, if he were more of a boss, he would have stood up to Packer and be like, no, absolutely not. This can't happen, right? He needs a little more Jan in him, right? Like, to lay down the law. But instead, Michael just kind of rolls over and just accepts it because he wants his party to be fun. And that's what Packer uses as ammunition for his argument, in that, like, your party's going to suck if you don't do this. And the last thing Michael wants
is to throw a lousy party. He wants people to like him, and he wants to be, like, successful. He wants to show that he can totally pull this off. And I think that he thinks if he does do a good job, then people will see that part of him.
And who doesn't want that? Everyone wants that, right?
Like,
everyone wants to be the cool kid throwing the cool party. And it's such a trigger for Michael that he just kind of accepts that, all right, now we're going to have a stripper. And he just starts going along with it.
Well, and I think that it is genuinely a self-confidence issue of, you know, wanting to be accepted by other people that you've talked about before. This is him thinking now, oh my, this is something I missed. This must be something that I sort of missed when I was younger, or because I haven't been to any bachelor parties in the past, I don't know this. If Packer is telling me this, then I believe what he's saying, which is the mistake. And so I have to, like, this is now gospel, and I have to do this. And it's really sad because it is Michael giving Packer his trust and, like, you know, having faith in the dude to tell him what's true and honest and right. And it's like, Michael, do you not see that that's the worst mistake you could possibly make, is to trust anything that Packer says?
I enjoy psychoanalyzing Michael, because throughout these episodes, we see him adjust and change. And I think in the first few seasons, like the first few parts of the first and second season, we wouldn't have even seen him make the suggestion of, no, this is wrong, it could be sexual harassment.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah.
And because we had the episode all about sexual harassment, and he's, like, learned or made these mistakes a few times now. And it's like we get this little trickle of, oh, look, he's learning. Oh, wait, never mind. Like, it got really close. He knows it's wrong. And we see that later on in the episode where he eventually stops the lap dance. But it's nice to see the progression. And it's not like a hard change. We're seeing a gradual progression in Michael's ability to absorb this information and become more aware.
And he's genuinely open to learning. His problem is, in most cases, his sources are bad, because there's that moment where Packer says separate but equal. And of course, we all know that that is not at all what separate but equal means, and that separate but equal is a terrible, terrible thing. But Michael takes what he's saying in faith and believes what he's saying and says, oh, that's what that means. And if he had the right source, it's almost like you wish that he had someone in the room who was a good person who could help him with these things, because so much of what's wrong with Michael and his actions, like, could be corrected. And I think, like, that's kind of what Pam does. She talks about him being a runaway train. And if you can stop that runaway train before it takes off from the station, then everything will be fine. But nobody was there to stop the runaway train.
In the spirit of separate but equal, Michael decides to get a stripper also for the ladies, and they are planning, you know, kind of a nice afternoon luncheon. And I love when Michael comes in and he starts trying to explain his side of the bachelor party that he's having.
Yeah, this is a luncheon shower, girls only.
No problem. The guys are having a little shindig of their own in the warehouse. Sort of a guy's night out. A GNO, if you will. A GNO. Actually, it's more of a guy's afternoon in. A GAI. A gay. Not gay. It's a bridal shower for guys. A guy shower. An hour-long shower with guys.
And he gets himself all tangled up in words, and it just keeps getting like more and more confused about what he's actually doing. He's trying to put a name to it that's kind of fun.
This is Michael at his best, sort of most hilarious, I should say, is whenever he's running away and he just doesn't know, like he talks about, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth next, but I'm just sort of start a sentence and see where it is. And he's trying to fix it.
I can totally relate because I've done this multiple times in my life. It's you try and explain something and you're like, wait, that wasn't right. Let me try it this way. Ooh, that one's worse.
Yeah. And then you don't like take a second to just breathe and think about it. It's too late. You're just gone and you're just suddenly, trying to explain yourself, but your brain is moving 10 steps ahead, trying to figure out, it is a nightmare. And so you can totally, feel for Michael in this moment, but it makes for a doggone hilarious little scene.
I really like when Michael comes into the office and announces to everybody that they are going to have for realsies co-ed naked strippers in the office. Angela, of course, as we know Angela, she is completely against it.
Under no circumstance should a man strip off his clothes in this office.
And I really love Meredith very passionately chiming in.
Shut up, Angela!
So many episodes go by where Meredith's kind of just in the background or doesn't really say much and doesn't really chime in, isn't making all the big jokes. But right here, like, this was Meredith's moment to be like, no, wait.
I loved it too.
I care about something.
And Angela, just her face, her just sort of like, whoa, this is, I've really upset Meredith, haven't I? And it's, Meredith wants this and doesn't want to. I need this. Don't ruin this for us.
During their little shower party, Angela takes a sip of the champagne.
Sparkling cider is very good. I think that's champagne.
And she spits it out. It's just so great. But throughout those scenes, in the background is Meredith, and she's kind of like drinking the champagne, but she has this face on that it's just like she's cringing because I think she thinks it's too sweet, which we've seen. Have we seen it before or it's coming up? But regardless, it is an indicator that Meredith is kind of a true alcoholic.
I think we did see it because it was in the episode where they had the two separate holiday parties and they made those, margaritas or whatever. And she's like, oh, too sweet. And just wants to straight up alcohol.
So yeah, she's drinking the champagne because she likes to drink in the office and she's allowed to now out in the open, but she's reluctant about it. And it's all in the acting and her face totally in the background of these scenes. And it's really good. I love that consistency.
Yes.
The entire time these parties are getting co-planned and then later on co-participated in, we see the backlash, shrapnel from the last reveal that Jim still had a thing for Pam and how that's affecting his and Karen's relationship. There's this great trio of confessionals from each of the characters, from Karen, from Jim, and from Pam, from all their perspectives. And it's really great how they tell this story of what's kind of happening off camera and how Pam is noticing. And then we get the scene with Pam and Jim in the break room.
She's gotten really good at reading the back of his head.
Never underestimate the power of a good night's sleep.
No, I'm sure you're right.
When I get 8 hours compared to like 6 hours, it's like big difference.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Gotta get your REM cycle going with the whole sleeping. Better than not.
Good advice, Beasley. Thanks. See you out there?
Yeah. Don't fall asleep at your desk.
Oh, my God. Man, she is not good at the casual flirty conversation. So awkward.
It is the really only bad. More awkward thing is when we'll talk about it, when Pam and Karen talk. Like, that's the only thing that's more awkward than this moment for me, because she's trying, and I feel that it's not even her trying to be flirty. I genuinely, because she talked about how she wants to be there for Jim, and she doesn't know that Phyllis revealed to Karen about her and Jim yet. And so I think that she's still just trying to be a friend here, just trying to be a good person and help Jim with whatever problems he's dealing with, because she sort of helped him in the past and helped mm-hmm. Karen too. And
right, with the apartment.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. like, I think she kind of senses some weirdness from Jim, because of course Jim's going to be awkward around Pam because he and Karen are having this disagreement involving Pam. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of, I've had those moments before where I've been talking to someone and you feel like you might sense some awkwardness for whatever reason. And then it makes you awkward and then they get more awkward, and it's sort of like a feedback loop. And that scene just sort of deteriorates. Not the scene. The scene is good, but like them talking, their conversation sort of deteriorates because of the awkwardness that goes on between them. And you as the viewer are realizing what's going on here and being like, oh my goodness, this is why Jim's being awkward, and this is why Pam is not very good at giving advice, and it's just
We know all the subtext that's going on, but we're watching this thing, and this scene in particular really goes beyond, I think, some of the other television or movie awkward moments that I've seen in the past. Like, you see awkward moments between people, but you could still tell that, you know, they're not that awkward. Even it's like, oh, this is playing awkward. It's supposed to seem awkward, or they make it funny awkward.
Yeah.
This is like just not funny. It's one of those, like, why are you saying these words?
It's so cringy.
There's nothing to say. You're just stating weird facts, and it's so weird, and I don't want to talk to you. And I can't believe I got that feeling from a character that I love normally. And it's just like, I just want to back away, like into the Homer bushes.
I love that. I love that, Tiff, because it's like, I don't even want to talk to you right now.
Like, I don't, these things you're saying have no, like, there's no feedback. There's no give or take response possible here. I just need to leave.
When I get 8 hours of sleep versus 6 hours, it's like, no, Pam, stop it,
Pam, because and it's so frustrating, because normally we like her so much, and in this scene it's just painful. Oh, Pam,
good work, Jenna Fisher.
We get a great follow-up scene where Jim and Dwight are separately booking the strippers, and Dwight is asking Jim what color hair the stripper should have.
Yes.
And Jim thinks about it for a minute, because Dwight first offers brunette or redhead, which the everyone in the audience immediately thinks, oh, Pam and Karen. And what does Jim say? Blonde. To not indicate himself with either preference. And I guess that's good for Dwight, because, you know, his lady's blonde. But it was just one of those moments of, ooh, you know, Pam is hearing that, and she was kind of waiting for him to say redhead, mm-hmm. right, instead of brunette.
And Karen's looking to see if he's going to say brunette instead of redhead. He's got him on either side of him. There's actually, you can see that Pam and Karen kind of make eye contact after that moment, which is
especially
kind of, ugh. Yeah, the two of them sort of glance at each other. And then Pam, I think, is the first one to look away. She looks back at her computer, and it's like, cringy. But my question for you is this. There's something about this that has always bothered me. The guys down in the warehouse, they end up getting an actual exotic dancer. Dwight calls a real place and gets an exotic dancer. And then, you know, everything happens how it does. But Jim decides, instead of calling that, he calls the Scholastic Readers of Pennsylvania and hires Benjamin Franklin. This is, it's funny, but I'm weirded out a little bit because of the fact that this is a prank that Jim pulls on a bunch of people that he's like, he's not part of it. He's downstairs in the warehouse, and he pulls a prank on people upstairs. And I don't know, like, I feel a little awkward, or I feel like a little bothered by it, because I don't think that it was Jim's right to sort of make that call for all the women to sort of, oh, well, I'm not going to take this seriously. And so I'm going to pull this prank. And then I don't sort of have to be part of the responsibility of receiving said prank because he's downstairs in the warehouse and down there they have an exotic dancer. And I don't know, like maybe I'm putting too much stock in like the opportunity to have an exotic dancer come, but I just don't think that it's fair really to the women. And it just feels kind of, I don't know, skidgy because Jim is sort of like making this decision that, well, the women don't get to have one.
So it's not actually separate, but equal.
Yeah.
And you're upset with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, so I did write down that I noted, most importantly, Phyllis was and Meredith were very into the idea of a stripper coming mm-hmm. visually on their faces as Michael is announcing that the stripper, the male stripper, was here. Then we find out it's Ben Franklin. Even though Michael still doesn't get it, he thinks that Ben Franklin might be wearing a thong underneath his costume.
He's so in funny. His knickers.
Who here is a history buff? Who's a fan of buff naked? Without further ado, the one, the only, the sexy Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
So funny. But yeah, I think it's funny that I just think it's a good prank because it's no stripper should have been hired at all
right.
for the office in the first place. And it's almost like Jim is getting everyone upstairs out of the awkward situation and pulling a prank at the same time.
Okay.
So I forgive him, but I do see your side. And it is a little sad that some people are into it, but then they turn it around. And I think that that's really funny in the scenes that are coming up.
Yeah, it's certainly the comedy. Yeah, the comedy is there and wouldn't be.
If this were real, it should have been one of the women who was ordering the
yes.
stripper.
Yes.
You know, two men shouldn't have been tasked with doing this. If the women upstairs were going to get a stripper and the men downstairs were going to get a stripper, then I guess it should have been one of the female members of the office ordering the stripper. But honestly, I couldn't have seen anyone besides maybe Meredith doing that.
She would have gotten a legit stripper, too.
We're not even going to mention what happens in the future.
Boy.
I'm not even going to say it because it's too good. For those of you know exactly why we're laughing at Meredith and the idea of a stripper. So we would have lost the comedy value of the writing of the show. So if you think about it, if it would have happened that Jim didn't order it and this was all actually happening, Meredith would have been the one ordering the stripper and a real stripper would have come and the same thing would have happened upstairs as it was downstairs. Some people would have been really felt super awkward and turned off. Other people might be kind of into it, but then like back off a little bit. Anyway, it was just a weird situation. So I'm not really blaming Jim for playing a prank here. I think that if anything, it should have gone both ways. They both should have been pranked, you know?
I am more thinking of it as, okay, this is a universe in which these characters are real people. And in that sense, like the person that is Jim making that decision for the women felt kind of bad to me, but certainly for the writing, yeah, it's hilarious. And for the sake of the humor, it's good.
And knowing how sympathetic Jim usually is, like he's not such like a jackhammer macho man like Dwight, and him doing this, it's, and the women, I'm sure they all know Jim and they would totally take this as a joke, and they did. And that's what made the scenes really funny, in that we have this scholastic speaker coming trying to talk about the life and history of Ben Franklin. And the ladies are all kind of dressed up, obviously ready for a bachelorette party. And then they start asking him all these questions about like his underwear and the ladies that he has in Paris and all of these leading questions.
And I guess the people that get the most kick out of it are Pam and Karen. And they sort
of
bond
they
over
bond
that.
Over
and
it.
So Jim, like, if he was doing anything, he may have been doing it with those two in mind, and it ended up work. Like it was a positive thing. Yeah.
That's what was so funny about it, and that they share those little moments, especially when Ben Franklin kind of hits on Pam a little bit.
Lord.
And they do that kind of schoolgirl look at each other and like giggle and be like,
can
oh my
believe
gosh.
This? Yeah.
Okay, Ben Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Franklin, the tight of cherries down to mouth.
Well, that is because I am a Renaissance man.
Ben Franklin?
Mm-hmm.
Do you wear boxers, briefs, or pantaloons?
Oh, well, you're very saucy.
This leads us into the heart-to-heart that Karen and Pam have in the kitchen, where Karen asks Pam if she still has feelings for Jim, being just as bold as she did with Jim. And Pam, man, these answers are so real and hard, because she answers yes, but then she's like, oh no, I didn't mean to say that.
I misunderstood your phrasing.
It's a slip of the lip, and it's all that psychology, and she's confused, and she does have feelings, but she's trying to be a good friend and not be aggressive about it. And it's a conversation that gets all muddled up, and it's kind of sad because it ruins their friendship a little bit, which was growing.
Yes.
But at the same time, Pam is kind of lying, and she has to lie in order to, it just becomes a really big mess of emotions and awkwardness.
Well, and that's part of it, is the way that the conversation goes, there was never necessarily going to be a point where Karen asked if Pam still had feelings, because Karen explains to Pam what was going on, how she found out that Pam and Jim kissed and that they talked about it and everything was good. But then Pam sits kind of silently and has this look on her face. And that's when Karen goes,
wait, you're not still interested in him?
It's posed as a question that's in a negative. And so when Pam says,
oh, yeah,
really?
Oh, no, I was confused by your phrasing. You should definitely go out with Jim. I mean, you're going out with Jim. I'm not going out with Jim.
It didn't necessarily have to happen that way, but because of the sort of awkwardness that's there between them that forms, that's whenever it sort of falls off. And then from there, it just gets worse and worse. And I cannot tell you how upsetting it is when, so Pam says at the end of this sort of thing, she says, sorry. And any normal human would not follow up to say, what are you sorry about? Because you would just go, oh, she's probably just saying sorry about the misunderstanding, and you'd move the heck on. But Karen literally, like some sort of zombie alien from a different planet, asks Pam, wait, what are you sorry for? And then
no,
it just makes it 10 times more awkward. What? No.
I don't think it's weird. It's not weird because Karen,
it's so weird.
I don't think it's weird because Karen is already in like a heightened state of, wait, what is she actually saying? Is it real? Like, she can sense that Pam still possibly does have feelings and she's trying to be nice about it. Like, it's so obvious, right? Like, and that's what Karen is picking up on. And so I think she's almost trying to bait her into telling the truth and saying something. Be like, well, then what are you sorry about? You know, because like feelings are and emotions are running hot right now. Like all the things, I don't know, like Karen's a little bit on the defensive here and wants to know what's going on with Pam. And so that's why she's like, what are you sorry about? Like kind of baiting her a little bit further and trying to get more information out of her. So I don't think weird thing.
You might see her as more aggressive than I do then.
Yeah, I'm seeing Karen as being pretty aggressive.
So listeners out there listening to this right now, let us know what you think about that moment, because I genuinely was like, why did she even fall? That's such a weird thing to do. But you might be right. And there could be something there where she's just like really bit onto the lead. She's really trying to squeeze everything she can out of Pam to see if there's more there.
Yeah, especially since she's just kept Jim up for 5 nights long, like talking about their relationship. I feel like this is occupying Karen's mind completely.
Yeah, that's fair, that she would really want to make sure she gets to the bottom of it, because otherwise she's just going to keep, because I think that's why a lot of people sort of want to have those conversations, is because if they don't, then they're just going to be spinning their cognitive cycles on them. And the only way to not be spinning your cognitive cycles on them is to feel like you have come to some sort of understanding or figured out the problem or what have you. So that sort of like reopens that wound. And, you know, then Karen's like scratching at it again because it's reopened.
I want to talk about the man meat downstairs.
Oh, my God. I want some of your man meat.
I love everything about the man meat.
Look at that. Nothing like grilling in the great outdoors. Is this the same grill you grilled your foot on?
No. Yes.
Oh, but I got all the foot off of it.
He questions if that was the same grill. Oh my goodness.
And Michael like tries to lie at first, and then he's like, yeah, it is. So gross.
And then so Michael's divvying out the meat.
Who wants some man meat?
I do. I want some man meat.
Huh? Michael, the white would like your man meat.
Well, then my man meat he shall have.
I love that they didn't get real forks and knives, like cut steaks and they're breaking.
Yes.
We get this great serious moment with Kevin where he's back in his like poker face, literally.
Oh my God.
And trying to set up a poker game, which I believe is the same game of poker he said he won at when he did the
that competition
poker tournament. Yeah. He's such a different person when he is playing poker.
Yeah, he gets serious.
His face changes. He gets like really focused and in on it. He looks really smart and like intelligent about everything that's going on. He has control over the situation, very in charge. It's a completely different Kevin than what we're used to. And we get a tiny little glimpse of that in this episode. And then we see him back upstairs being a dodo.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what's going on here? The fan theory is just, it's penetrating my brain. Like it's telling me that this, it might be true. He's embezzling.
He's very good. He's very good at acting is might be what it is. Yeah. One question or not question, but one sort of thing to add to your psychoanalysis of Michael. Mm-hmm. I really do feel like this is a tell of people who have either not had a chance to play games with like friends when they were young, or maybe they like their parents and them never played games at the table. A lot of times, I'm not going to say in every situation, but it is telling, and it is a very intentional thing for Michael to sit down and shuffle the cards. And the way that he shuffles the cards mm-hmm. is not by actually shuffling, but he sort of throws the cards out on the table and mixes them around.
Like he never learned, you know, no one ever taught him how to play group
games.
Yeah,
he never learned how to shuffle cards. That is what that moment is trying to show, just more of his sad,
lonely
upbringing. Oh, poor guy.
I really enjoy the time between Dwight and Jim in the parking lot when the dancer is arriving.
Have you ever seen a stripper before?
Yes. Jennifer Garner portrayed one on Alias. It was one of her many aliases.
Yeah, me neither.
It's such an innocent, wonderful little back and forth between the two of them where they're kind of bonding in their nerdiness or wholesomeness or genuineness.
Right, exactly.
We get a great aside from Roy. Bam, Roy's back for like 2 seconds. Where the heck has he been? I don't know. Maybe trying to better himself, get himself back up to snuff for Pam.
Growing a beard, apparently.
I'm not really into strippers. You know what I find sexy? Pam's art. She's an artist, and I appreciate that. It's very moving and sexy. The art.
Yeah, he doesn't find strippers sexy. He finds Pam's art sexy. It's deep.
I like that confessional from him. It's so he's trying so hard, and it feels so disingenuous.
Yes.
But his eyes are kind of misty. I don't know.
Yeah,
just the way he looks in that confessional, I think he's really trying.
I think that he misses Pam and wishes to have Pam back, but I don't think that he
thinks he's supposed to say this. Yeah, he doesn't really.
Yes, it's not that he appreciates Pam and what she does. It's he's just like, these are the things that you say in order to come off as the person that Pam would want, and that's not great there, Roy.
So despite the fact that we think that maybe the entire warehouse would be really, really into the idea of this stripper, which Packer convinced Michael was a great idea and the only way to do a bachelor party, it turns out everyone hates it. Everyone thinks it's super awkward, and even they're trying to like feign enthusiasm for it, and everyone's like, and Michael gets up, he's like, all right, we're gonna do this. Even Michael's, you know, enthusiasm doesn't seem 100% genuine, and he puts a stop to the dance when it's happening. He's like, this is wrong, he can't take it anymore, because he's deep down, he's a really good person and he doesn't need this in his life.
Yeah, and he feels like it's unfaithful, he's being unfaithful,
and he wants to be faithful. He
yes.
seems he's a kind, one woman focused kind of relationship person, and it was Packer who convinced him that in order to be a real man or have a real man's party, you needed this stripper there. And it's totally not true, because almost everyone in that room being a real man, no one liked it. Like, and you know, what is a real man? It's just this garbage term. And that's why we hate Packer.
Even though he's claimed to be before, Michael is truly not a philanderer.
No, he's not a philanderer at all. So Dwight being the fiscally responsible person he is.
Easily a favorite moment of mine, too.
He brings Elizabeth upstairs.
Elizabeth, I want you to sit here. When the phone rings, answer it.
You want me to answer phones with my clothes on?
We hired you for 3 hours work, and we're going to get it.
And this episode kind of concludes in a really unlikely way. I like how we see Michael feeling remorse for his dance and calling up Jan and everything. You know, we see that that was a yeah. funny scene and everything. But what I really like is he goes for advice to both Benjamin Franklin and the stripper. And he's asking them for advice on how to tell, you know, his girlfriend what he just did. And I like that he concludes that through their answers, Benjamin Franklin is a total sleazo creep and that the stripper is wise and should be made president because she gave him advice that rhymed.
It's gold.
Secrets are no fun. Secrets hurt someone.
Wow. Thank you.
I feel like at the end here, I'm going to be dropping in a whole bunch of sound bites because this episode is just full of those quick little quips that explain so much. And it's really concise and beautifully shot. I mean, it's like 20 minutes long and we get this giant story out of this episode. We get so many great Dwight moments. He's trying to outsmart Benjamin Franklin.
Jim told him that Ben Franklin, that's the real Ben Franklin that's there. And Dwight is convinced that that can't be the real Ben Franklin.
He's 99% sure, but he's going to throw all the trivia he possibly can to try and stump this person. And Ben Franklin, aka Gordon, doesn't give him the chance.
Are you nearsighted or farsighted?
Both. That's why I invented the bifocal.
We didn't mention Gordon hitting on Pam, right?
Yes, Gordon hits on Pam and she's like,
You know I invented electricity.
I know.
Well, I'm sensing a little electricity right here.
Didn't Ben Franklin have syphilis?
Yes, but I don't. My name is Gordon.
Oh.
I don't know. This is one of my favorites. I don't know. I like sexy Ben Franklin. I think it's really weird and funny, that whole concept. And then I also really like the secrets quote, because it's one of my favorites and I use it really a lot.
Yes, I use it a lot as well. And so a couple things here. One, I think that Gordon is a good trivia question. And then two, I think that when we get to going forward, and I wish that I would have thought about this in the beginning, and maybe we can at the end of season three, we'll do this. But I think that we should, in the episode where we talk about the last episode in the season, we say our favorite episode from said season.
Ooh, I like that.
And we can talk about why that's our favorite episode. So keep this one in mind, because I agree, Ben Franklin episode is fun.
It's just such a standout. It's so easy to remember.
Yes.
That's what kind of makes it a favorite, and that like a lot of the other episodes, you can kind of forget which it was part of and where it was, because it kind of...
They blend a little bit.
Fade mm-hmm. together in this general story arc.
Well, yeah, Traveling Salesman, like I said, that one, mm-hmm. I was like, what is this episode again?
Based on the title, you can think of it as a couple different episodes, but for some reason, Ben Franklin, it's just so like, Phyllis's Bachelor. Like, that's what it was. Man meat. Like, it all comes back to you, flooding back. Another good trivia question is the stripper's name.
Yes. Can you remember it's Elizabeth?
Elizabeth and Gordon are our two sages of advice for this episode.
Would you like me to hand out the Dundee this week?
I would. I love when you hand out the Dundee. I don't know. I think you do you're a very good Dundee MC.
Oh, well, thank you. All right. This week's Dundee.
The Dundees. How do I explain it?
I'm happy that you all made it. All right. So this week's Dundee is a bit of a pat on the back. And that's it's a big pat on the back. And that's because it's coming from our ratings and reviews in Apple Podcasts. This one is from a user who calls themselves Little Stitious, which is incredible. And it is entitled This Beats Other Podcasts. Here goes. New to the podcast world, I tried a few other office-themed podcasts because I'm a self-proclaimed superfan and found this one to be the best. I love the smart commentary and the rich voices of the podcasters. The audio equipment is great, so you can concentrate on the content rather than be distracted by background noise.
Bam.
I've binge-watched The Office on loop for years, same, and the little nuances they found blow my mind. Love everything about this, but sometimes I start a sentence and I don't even know where it's going, so I just hope to find it along the way. Little Stitious, you threw in the I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious reference, as well as the sometimes I start a sentence and I don't even know where it's going, so I just hope to find it along the way. So for that, we are giving you a Dundee, but because we are patting ourselves on the back, we are calling this week's Dundee the World's Best Boss Award. So Little Stitches, come on up, get on up here and accept your Dundee. We love us and you.
We do. And so does Little Stitches. And so Little Stitches. I really enjoyed this review. And so thank you very much to Little Stitches for taking the time and writing that for us.
Yes,
we really appreciate being the best boss.
Yes. We are always paying attention to those ratings and reviews. So, you know, if you're looking for a Dundee in your future, then go ahead and leave that. And one request, if you are on Twitter, I would love it if you left your Twitter handle in your review, so that way we can tag you and follow you from the show account.
If you are not following us over on Twitter, we're at @tall_beats, and that's where we post when our shows go up and when we post the awesome Dundee Awards that Micah makes for everyone who wins one. It's very exciting. You could also subscribe and become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, and also access to our members only bonus feed, which include bootleg episodes of some shows and possibly a little special episode from us. We are going to start planning. Trivia. I don't know. Something. We'll figure it out. But you will certainly be getting that over when you become an Incomparable member. So we will announce if anything special comes from us, and you can get it through membership. So you can also join us over in the conference room, which is a members only Slack. And we will be back next week, which is, it's 6 days away, Phyllis's wedding.
Oh, Phyllis is getting married.
Phyllis is married to Bob Vance.
I'm getting married to Bob Vance.
Oh!